Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today for a collection of curious puppy behaviors. Our guest is Tom Davis of Green Bay, who's been living with and writing about dogs for the past 30 years, the author of the books Just Golden, Why Dogs Do That, and Why Goldens Do That. He is also now the creator of Why Puppies Do That. It's published by Willow Creek Press, and we're happy to have Tom Davis on the telephone with us today. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Jim.
Nice to talk with you.
Good to be here.
How come dogs are such a meaningful part of your life?
You know, it's hard to answer that, but I think I trace it back to a time when I was in about the sixth grade. I'd never had a dog, and my sixth grade teacher thought I'd be interested in reading the Big Red books by Jim Kjellgaard, who coincidentally, you know, lived in Wisconsin for a good part of his life in the 1950s. And I read the Big Red books. There's a trilogy, Big Red, Irish Red, and Outlaw Red. And at that point, I had to have a dog. And my parents, God bless them, decided, yeah, he could have a dog. So we eventually got an Irish setter puppy named Sheila. And I had hoped that she'd be a hunting dog for me. I've always been a bird hunter. She didn't really pan out as a hunter, but we had wonderful adventures, and I've pretty much had dogs ever since, and they've been part of my life ever since. Although certainly at the time I got my first dog, I never dreamed that I'd be writing about dogs for a living.
Well, and you write about golden retrievers, so somewhere along the line you made a switch. Was golden a better hunting dog?
Well, I've actually never owned a golden retriever. I've written about goldens and been around goldens a lot. But the dogs I have personally at the moment are English setters. And I've also had English pointers. So
why not English, you know, the setters?
Well,
just setters. Why setters do that.
I've actually written some books about pointing dogs. I wrote a book called To the Point, which was a coffee table book that I collaborated on with a photographer named Dale Spartas. And the subtitle of that book is A Tribute to Pointing Breeds. I think the big reason there is it's simply a marketing thing. Retrieving breeds, and specifically the Golden Retriever and the Labrador Retriever, are two of the most popular breeds in the country.
That is true. You are picking the widest audience.
I think that's sort of a bottom line decision there. That you know, the Lab is far and away the most popular breed, and there is a Why Labs Do That book in the works. And the Golden has been the second or third most popular breed. As a matter of fact, it was second for a number of years, and in the most recent tabulation, it's been eclipsed by the Yorkshire Terrier as the second most popular breed. But I don't think there'll be a Why Yorkies Do That, at least not under my name.
All right. Tom Davis is our guest, and if you'd like to join in with your observations and questions about puppy behaviors, then you can give us a call in Madison at 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. I have a proprietary interest in this program because Deb and I are the keepers of nearly 11-month-old puppy, a Boston Terrier puppy by the name of Riley.
Oh, boy.
And Riley is a little runt of the litter. He is at almost, I think he's pretty much full grown, and he's 8 pounds. But he's 8 pounds of dynamite.
Well, it's the old saying, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog.
Well, and we're trying to convince him that he doesn't have to fight all the big dogs. So let's talk. You know, why do puppies sometimes lie on their backs when they're approached?
Well, it's a submissive posture, and that's a very powerful symbolic gesture in the dog world. As we all know, dogs are pack animals. In the wild, the wolves have a pack with an alpha who's sort of in control and in charge, and the rest are in various subordinate roles. And when a puppy rolls on its back at your approach, it's demonstrating its submissiveness and its recognition of you as the alpha. You know, this is one of the reasons I get a lot of questions about Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer on TV. He's very popular now, and he does incredible things with dogs. And the big thing that makes him so good is that he understands body language.
He really does.
He understands. It's not what he says. It's what he does. It's the way he moves. It's the way he approaches dogs. It's the way his gestures and his posture and his attitude. So much of that are things that the average dog owner has a very rudimentary grasp of, and we'd all do better if we were a little more insightful about that.
Mm-hmm. If we were in tune to those moments when dogs change from one condition to another.
Correct. Yeah, this is always going on. I mean, dogs will continue to sort of test us and see if they can, you know, get a little bit of an edge over us. And I don't think we have to be paranoid about that, but we do have to be aware that that's happening. And occasionally we do need to step back and kind of reassert our authority.
Tom Davis is our guest. His book, Why Puppies Do That, is published by Willow Creek Press. You can go to willowcreekpress.com and see more about it. Tom is an editor for several magazines, including Sporting Classics and Pointing Dog Journal, and so you may have seen his writing in there. And are you still a sort of a senior editor at Wisconsin Trails magazine?
No, I'm not. Wisconsin Trails and I sort of parted company a couple of years ago. I do a little bit of freelance stuff for them, but I'm no longer have an official affiliation.
All right. Let's go to the phones. They're full, and we'll start off with Tim in Sparta. Tim, hi. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two Hungarian Vizslas, and I'm an avid pheasant hunter. And I was just curious, when they were like 7 weeks old, and I first got them, I would put a pheasant feather right in front of them, and they just automatically pointed at it. And it was just amazing to me how that was just totally instinctive trait. Didn't have to teach them it. It just, bam, they did it. Then the other thing is one of my dogs naturally would hold point when the other one was on point, and the other one, I really had to work at him to teach that. One was kind of more instinctive on holding point on another dog. The other one I had to teach how to hold point when another dog goes on point. And I was just curious about the instinctive traits on all that.
Sure. Well, the Vizsla is a you know, wonderful pointing breed. It was developed on the plains of Hungary. It was actually originally used for falconry. It would point partridges, and falconers would then put their birds up, and the falcons would dive at these partridges after they were flushed. So the Vizsla has a long, long history of being developed as a pointing breed, and that's why these puppies will point a wing. They've got so much pointing instinct, and it probably wouldn't have to be a wing. You could probably have fluttered a handkerchief in front of them, and they would have pointed it. That's so instinctive in them. Now, it's not all dogs, not all breeds have such a strongly developed pointing instinct, but most of the pointers, English setters, Vizslas, Brittany's, breeds like that, when they're very young puppies, you can typically get them to point a wing, and it's pretty neat to see. You don't want to overdo it because it can tend to get them to focus too much on sight pointing, and they won't use their noses, but it can be fun to do, and it doesn't do any harm. Now, as far as the one dog, what we call backing the other dog's point, again, that's an instinctive thing, and it's not as well developed as the actual pointing instinct. Some dogs will back another dog on point immediately, and other dogs seem to have very little of that, or even go to the opposite extreme and will try to steal a point from another dog because of jealousy or whatever. But it sounds like you've been able to overcome that by training, and usually you can train that behavior pretty readily.
Tim, thank you very much for your call. We move on to Tom in Madison. Tom, what's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Mr. Davis.
Good morning.
Boy, the stars are aligned, I got to tell you. I grew up with Vizslas, and actually my wife is picking up our Weimaraner this afternoon. He's he's ready, and we're going out to pick him up. And we've got a lab at home that we kind of got through a rescue, and she hasn't, because of the problems that existed with her prior to us getting her, we haven't been able to develop her as a hunter, and that's the hope with the wine. But anyway, my wife's very thorough, very smart girl. She's done a lot of research. But if you can, and I know I'm not sure if you can steer me, what about your best tip as far as house training our new wine, who we're going to call either Cosmo or Kilo, I guess. But anyway, any tips you can give me?
Well, the easiest way to do that, and you can find all kinds of resources in books and even online, is crate training. Find a crate of an appropriate size. You don't want it to be too big, and keep the pup in the crate. And when you let it out, use a command such as outside, and immediately hustle the dog outside and make sure it does its business. And then, put it back in the crate. And it's just amazing how quickly that behavior of doing its business outside will be reinforced. But some sort of a crate conditioning program is far and away the best way to do that, much better than just letting the pup roam around all the time and then just sort of trying to make a guess as to when it needs to go outside.
And in terms of the length of time that it can go between trips to the bathroom, is there a formula based upon that puppy's age?
You know, that I don't know. I mean, obviously, they can go longer and longer as they get older, but...
I think they can add like an hour a month.
Is that, I guess I don't know that, Jim, so... I'm sure if you Googled something or went online, you could find
that
charts
kind of thing.
For that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to you, Tom.
Thank you. Just another quick story, if I may.
Yes.
Back when I was raised with the Vizslas and the birds were prevalent back in the early 70s, we had the same basic condition exist that the previous caller had. And once the older Vizsla slammed on the point, the younger Vizsla came up behind, and my dad used the term honoring the point. And the younger one did not honor the older Vizsla's point. She turned around and pierced a couple of nice holes right in the younger one's ear. The dog never did it again. It was amazing. Vizslas are fantastic dogs, and if we'd have been able to afford the $1,200, we'd have gotten one, but we went with a Weim.
Well,
anyway,
good luck with your Weimaraner.
All right, Tom, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. Our guest is Tom Davis of Green Bay. He is the author of Why Puppies Do That. It's published by Willow Creek Press. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. One of the benefits of this puppy, Riley, that we got from a breeder in the Fox Valley there was that it came with its litter box. And so the trick with her is that as those puppies were whelped and as the mother began to care less for them, she would time the time between eating and then put them into a litter box, reward them for a job well done. And by the time that we got Riley at 4 months or 3 months, 4 months, I think it was, he was using that regularly.
I'll be darned.
And still does today.
Oh, really? So do you have him where he'll go outside, Jim, or is he just
We have him where he'll go outside, and we encourage that, but he certainly is loyal to that if he's inside. He will leave the conversation and run upstairs, do his business, and come back down.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So let's go to Darby next in Brookfield. Hello, Darby.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
Well, I have two English Terriers. One's a year and one's over 2 years. And they destroy anything and everything they can. They've got fur, but they will chew.
Darby, you're cutting out, and we're only picking up about half of the words. It is English pointers, and they are constantly chewing. What general advice can you give to her?
Boy, that's a tough one. Yeah. I wonder if the dogs are getting enough exercise. They sound like they're high-energy dogs that may be bored, or they just need something to engage their minds and burn off a little energy. So I try to give them more exercise and obviously remove the sources of temptation. She's probably already done that, but you know, that can be a tough one. And it could be, you know, some dogs are just not great house dogs. They're just too high-powered. They want to pace all the time. They might be better off in a kennel situation outside.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you better.
Hello?
Yes, Darby, we can hear you better now.
Okay, well, you know, the thing is they're kenneled at night, but really it's gotten away from that because I've tried to teach them, you know, that it's okay if you're inside, whatever. We have an electric fence, an acre and a half. They go to the dog park at least once a day, and my husband takes them hunting almost every weekend, 70% of the year. So it's not like they're not being run.
Oh, I guess not.
No.
They're being exercised. I mean, they spend the most, I would say, 10 hours outside a day usually.
You know, I think that you're going to have to contact a professional behaviorist on this. It isn't something that we can solve over the air for
well,
you.
Well, yeah, I think you may have to just go back and do some real basic obedience work and kind of regain control. It sounds like these dogs are just sort of running amok and kind of running roughshod over you and your husband in the house, and I think you need to administer some tough love to get them to toe the line.
Mm-hmm. Exercise, discipline, affection. That's what Cesar Millan will use for his mantra.
Exactly.
And in most cases, why it certainly seems to work. Good luck, Darby, but I don't think that we can give you the help that you need over the phone. Bernie in Madison, let's go to you next. Bernie, what's on your mind?
Well, actually, I'm in Manitowoc.
All right.
I heard you mention English setters, and I happened to get one that I adopted from the local Humane Society. He was a runaway. And that is his problem. I want to use him for hunting, and we have a place in the country for him. He certainly has all the hunting behavior down pat. He does the points. He finds the birds. Any little birdies he sees on the lawn, he goes into a point. But he has a problem returning or staying close. He just loves to get out and do open field running, and that's what he loves. And when he gets beyond, say, 50 feet, he's almost impossible to recall. And I'm just wondering if you have any pointers or suggestions along those lines for
well,
that.
Well, yeah, again, you need to sort of go back to the basic obedience stuff and, you know, get him to come when he's called. Assume you're using a whistle to do that. You may want to work him on a long check cord, like a 50-foot check cord, and just, you know, don't turn him loose. Just work him on that repeatedly, and go. You might go several weeks or months. If all else fails, you may have to resort to an electronic collar. It's a very powerful tool, but it can accomplish great results. The other thing I'd sort of strongly recommend is that you maybe seek out a professional gun dog trainer and have the dog evaluated, and maybe, you know, put in some money, maybe spend a few $100 for a month or two of training. Professional trainers deal with these kind of situations all the time, and in a very short period of time, they can accomplish a lot. So that might be something to look into.
I've tried the rope thing. And it seems that he has learned that if he's within the range of the rope, he comes back. If he's a little bit beyond the length of the rope when he's off the leash, well, then he doesn't have to come back.
Yeah. Well, and at this point, I'm afraid the electronic collar and or some professional help are your alternatives.
Good luck to you, Bernie. Thanks very much. Tom Davis is our guest. He's from Green Bay, and he's the author of Why Puppies Do That. It's published by Willow Creek Press. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we talk about puppies and puppy behaviors. And in your book, one of the things that you talk about is why puppies are rarely afraid of new people, but usually suspicious of new dogs.
Well, that's right. You know, dogs and men have been, dogs and humans, I should say, have been together for 15,000 years as partners and collaborators. And puppies just, as a result, they just seem to naturally gravitate to people. Dogs, on the other hand, you know, that sort of harks back to their wild ancestry. As we all know, dogs are descended from wolves and genetically almost identical, very, very tiny difference in their DNA. And they always have this suspicion of other animals, and particularly other dogs, until they know for sure that their intentions are honorable, so to speak. I always say that in the wild, you need to be suspicious. If you're not, you could end up as a meal for some larger, stronger predator.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result, puppies have this innate fear of other animals that they're not familiar with. But humans, on the other hand, they just run to them. That's one of the other things in the book is why do puppies run to you if you get down on your knees? Well, once you're at their level, they want to be all over you.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That is true. And that is one way to disarm a dog, is to get down at their level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've got a dog that's, you know, a lot of times you'll have a dog, and I've had this situation myself where I see a dog that's obviously lost or has run away and needs to be corralled. And the first thing you do is get down on one knee. And another thing that works often is if you've got a handkerchief or something in your pocket to draw its attention, wave that around a little bit. And that'll often, their curiosity will get the better of them, and they'll come into you.
Let's take a call from Bill in Lodi next. Hi, Bill. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I got a pointing lab, and I didn't necessarily know it was a pointing lab until I had him out in the field. Actually, I watched him point. His deal is, though, that he won't hold the point. He just, it's a brief point, and then he goes on to flush. And I was just wondering if there was any way you can train him to hold point.
Oh, certainly. I mean, if that's the behavior you want the dog to demonstrate, if you want him to be a pointing dog and he seems to have that instinct, you just need to use a command such as stay or whoa. Put the dog, for example, set up a situation where you have a planted bird, a pigeon or a quail or whatever that you've put in some cover. Work the dog on a check cord. When it goes on to point, use the command stay and make sure it stays there until you go in and kick up the bird. It's a very simple thing to train. It's just repetition and consistency. And it's the same way that trainers of bona fide pointing breeds, pointers, German shorthairs, they do the same thing to establish what they call staunchness on point. Most dogs will want to, what they call, flash point briefly, go in and flush the bird, and that's what your dog is doing. If you want it to point and stay staunch, you just have to reinforce that stay or whoa command.
Okay.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot. I appreciate hearing from you. Our number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234 if you'd like to join the conversation with Tom Davis. And let's go next to Jeremy in Milwaukee. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. Morning.
Yes.
Hey, I just going back to why puppies do that, I have a we have a stray that we got from Kentucky through the Humane Society here in Milwaukee. And she has a tendency to eat as fast as possible. And I've been able to train her to, you know, I say, calm down, and she stops eating. And I say, okay, and she starts again. But if I let her go, she'll just devour the whole thing instantly. Is that just a tendency because she was a stray? Is there anything that I can try and do to slow her down naturally? Or is that just something that there's not really any fixing?
Well, you probably can't slow down that natural tendency. It could be a combination of factors. It could be that as a stray, she really had to scramble and fight and you know, look for food, and she was hungry a lot. And as a result, when she gets the opportunity, she takes full advantage of it. But it's also the case that some dogs that have never known hunger in their lives just are naturally fast eaters. Labrador retrievers are notorious for that. I mean, they just will, you know, not in all cases, but very often just hoover their food. I mean, unbelievable. There is a product on the market, and I'm sure that they would have it at one of the larger, you know, chain pet stores, and I can't think of the name of it. But what it is, it's a food dish that's got some rounded projections that come up from the bottom, and this forces the dog to pick the food out of the dish rather than just insert its whole muzzle into it and suck the food up. And that, it just slows them down, and you might want to check into that. That would probably be very helpful.
Okay.
All right, Jeremy, thank you very much for your call. Good luck to you. A caller wanted to know why golden retrievers chew on your ankles as you're out walking them.
Well, that, I guess,
is that universal in the breed?
I don't know. I don't know that that's universal in the breed. I think that's more of an individual expression. So I'm not sure I could answer that.
Do all puppies become adults at pretty much the same age?
Well, they all have different rates of maturation, and typically the larger breeds tend to mature more slowly than the smaller breeds. So it's just hard to really generalize about that. I mean, certainly, you know, some things happen. It's usually about 2 to 3 weeks when they begin to open their eyes and they'll begin to get their teeth in at the same time. But you really, you know, you don't want to hold yourself to the charts and to the what people say is the average. I think it's very important to take each puppy as an individual, monitor it as an individual, and take it as it comes, so to speak.
And back to the phones, to Susan in Madison next. Hello, Susan.
Hi. Speaking of individuals, I have a 5-year-old golden. I have a 5-year-old golden, and she just seems to constantly want to see if she can be the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked a little earlier about, you know, establishing discipline and getting the dog to, you know, to think of what you want as being the most important. But there's kind of mean ways to do that, and there's overly permissive ways to be ignored. Would you give some examples of things that are most likely to establish the right balance?
Well, I think, again, without knowing specifically what your dog's doing, it can be pretty tough. And you know, and I hate to make a diagnosis over the phone, but I think the big thing is be firm and be consistent. I mean, those are the two watchwords here. You know, dogs will try to get away with things, and one of the best pieces of training wisdom I ever heard was, what you let a dog do is what your dog thinks you want it to do. So you just, if the dog is behaving in inappropriate ways, you have to find ways to make it clear that that is inappropriate.
Susan, give us an example.
Yeah,
if
you could give us a specific, that might be helpful.
Of the kind of behavior that you're referring to.
Yeah, playing fetch. So, you know, you throw the ball and she'll run and get it, and then she'll kind of watch. And she'll kind of walk around with it and look at you, and then, you know, just when you're about ready to give up on her, then she'll bring it back.
Well, I think that's
this is a battle of wits here.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common, and I don't know that that's such a dominance type behavior. It's just sort of a quirky individual thing. Is it bothering you because she's just not bringing it back right away? Or I think that might be the kind of thing that, you know, unless you're getting into a situation where you want to, you know, compete with your dog and it's incumbent on them to bring the thing back right away, that's just sort of the way they play the game.
So she thinks she's playing the rules.
Well, she is kind of making up her own rules, but if... I mean, I don't know that that's the kind of thing to get so worked up about that, you know, you want to be real, become a disciplinarian to get her to bring it back. I mean, you could certainly do something like just put a light, a long light lead on her collar and, you know, give her some light pressure and make her bring it back right away. And then, you know, get her to go fetch it again. Or what you could do, probably the best way to approach this would be, reward her when she brings it back right away with another throw. But if she's going to play this keep-away game, then just, you know, don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we do the another throw. And that's, I think, why she keeps her eye on you, like, when are you ready to give up?
Right. 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 Well,
good luck, Susan. Yeah. We do appreciate hearing about your dog and wish you best of luck on that. Bob in La Crosse, let's give you a chance. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I've got a one-year-old golden retriever. I'm kind of getting an echo here.
Yes, you are, because that radio is up too loud in the background.
Oh, okay. And real good dog. She gets plenty of exercise, good diet, just a wonderful dog. The problem is that when I go to kennel her, she bares her teeth.
Hmm.
And we've got a grandchild on the way and kind of concerned about it.
When you say go to kennel her, you mean just put her in the kennel?
Put her in the crate, yes.
That's strange. I don't quite understand that. I mean, obviously she doesn't want to go in. Has she had any kind of a bad experience or a trauma while she's been in the crate?
Not that I know of. She's fine when she's in there. I can bribe her to go in.
Yeah.
You know, with food, but
sure.
Other than that, she won't do it willingly.
Well, she's probably used to getting the treat for going in.
Yeah, that's odd. Yeah, I'm not. Obviously, you can't have a dog that's baring its teeth, especially with little kids around. I'm not sure what the answer for that one is.
Okay. Have you asked?
Because I don't quite understand why. You know, what is causing her to do that? That would make it, you know, so traumatic or painful for her that she doesn't want to go in the crate.
Yeah, she won't snap. She won't, actually nip at you. It shows it, like, I don't want to go in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's one that we really can't help you with, and I hope that you'll take that up with maybe your veterinarian or ask a professional.
Yeah, you might want to call Trish McConnell on that one.
Behaviorist on that. That is the kind of question that that they normally would answer on Calling All Pets on the weekends
on
here.
Saturday mornings.
Saturday mornings on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good luck to you, Bob. Thank you very much for your call. Let's see what we can do with Alan in Sherwood. Hello, Alan. Alan? Alan, you're not there. So I guess we'll have to go on to Chris next in Oshkosh. Hi, Chris.
Hi, guys. I guess my question is, I've always had Brittany's before, and I've always gotten my dogs when they're 5 weeks old. And a breeder that we're thinking about going to now is insisting we go 8 weeks.
I don't think that'll be a problem. 5 weeks is a little young. You know, the rule of thumb for a long time has been 7 weeks, and that's probably been harped on so much that it's people get a little obsessive about that. 5 weeks is a little young, but if that's worked out for you, then that's great. As a matter of fact, I got one of my best dogs when she was 5 weeks old. But I wouldn't be 8 weeks. I would not be concerned at all about that. I think it'll work out just fine.
Well, I guess what I was looking at is the dogs have always bonded really well with us, and I've always had a lot of luck training them. I waited 7 weeks with one lab, and it could have just been his personality, but it was very hard to train him.
I'm thinking that was probably the personality. There's actually a growing body of opinion that says that it's really better to leave the dogs in their litter with their litter mates until they're 10 to 12 weeks old, actually, before they go to their new families. And there's so many cases of puppies that, for whatever reasons, aren't sold and stay until they're 3, 4, 5 months old, and they turn out just fine. So I think that's really a matter of the individual and the kind of training and care they get at their new home. But I would, 8 weeks is that should not be any problem whatsoever.
No.
What is the advantage to having them stay there longer, though?
For the medical tests that the breeder probably will put them through?
Yeah, that, and I think that there's just, you know, the whole 7 week thing was based on a couple studies that had been, and it was sort of based on willful interpretations of the findings, and I'm not, you know, real conversant with the rationale for the 10 to 12 week time, but there's some pretty good science behind that in what they've done with the animal behavior and how they bond and how they relate to their litter mates and when they should really be leaving. And but I think again the bottom line is you can't get totally wrapped up in these dates. Like you said, 5 weeks worked for you well. 7 weeks has been a standard, and that's worked for a lot of people. But you tend to get too wrapped up in this stuff, and it's not as important as a lot of people make it out to be. The important thing is when you get that puppy home, you give it a good nurturing environment and good care,
and everything will turn out fine. Chris, thanks very much, and good luck to you. Reed, let's give you a chance there in West Salem. Hi, go ahead.
Okay. Well, as a longtime breeder myself, I just kind of wanted you guys to address the question of puppy worth and the expense of raising puppies and raising them right, because I have a strong feeling, personal feeling, that dogs are not a commercial crop, if you will, and that a well socialized puppy and a good breeder is constantly going to be losing money, pretty much. I think that it's a misnomer that a lot of people feel that they can do the equivalent of going out and buying a Rolex from a sidewalk vendor.
Tom, why don't you go ahead on that?
Well, I hope, I hope I've not given anybody the impression that I think puppies are crops, because they're not. Raising dogs and breeding dogs is very, very difficult. It's very, very time-consuming. I don't know anybody who's gotten rich off it, and I don't think that financial reward is why anybody does it. It's certainly not why they should do it. It's because of their love for that particular breed, and because they have an interest in improving that breed and a love for dogs in general. And no one should go out and think they can get a puppy cheap. No one should go bargain shopping for puppies. If you decide you want a puppy and this is a big decision, you should do your research. You should go to a reputable breeder, one that has been doing it for a while, that offers a very good health guarantee. And the other thing to keep in mind, and I tell people this all the time, is that the purchase price of a puppy is a very small amount of what you're going to spend over that dog over the course of the 10, 12, or 15 years that it's your companion.
Very good. And Reed, thank you very much for your call. Tom, been a pleasure to spend some time with you today.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure being on the show.
We'll look forward to your next book, whatever it may be. It'll be about dogs.
Undoubtedly. Thanks, Jim.
Tom Davis of Green Bay is the author of Why Puppies Do That. It's published by Willow Creek Press. You can get more there at willowcreekpress.com. Thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production today. In just a moment, we will be talking about some armchair travel, the culture and cuisine of Italy, coming up on the Ideas Network.